Good morning, everybody. I want to just acknowledge that there's a certain Hashgacha Pratis this morning, and that Hashgacha Pratis is that the day we're talking about food is the day that we don't have food. But there's also another aspect of the Hashgacha Pratis. We don't have a sponsor today, so the food when we don't have sponsors, there's no coffee. It happens to be because we have the Based In program later on, and it's the same caterer, there's a confusion as to if this was a separate program, same program. Nonetheless, I apologize for the lack of this, but a lot of what we're going to be talking about is fleishik, so we don't want to get that mixed with coffee. So let's start. We're going to talk about, today we get an opportunity of learning about something which has become more and more popular, which is sous vide in the kosher kitchen. Just by a show of hands, who here owns a sous vide? Anybody here own sous vide? Oh, Barry. Yes, Barry's actually one who brought it up to me a year and a half ago already. Esther has one. Okay, there we go. Good. There's some practical applications before it comes out of the box. So let's discuss some of those. Anyway, here, eat sous vide. Anybody eats, you probably don't realize you've eaten sous vide. So I had the opportunity this last summer. I had the opportunity of being a scholar in residence on a tour to Glacier National Park, which was fantastic, really, really incredible. And actually, this year, we're actually heading to Yellowstone, for those who are interested in going to out the west. It's absolutely magnificent. And the chef on the tour is Seth Warshaw from ETC and TDEC. And a lot of the cooking that he used to do was sous vide. It was excellent. Probably the most magnificent meat I've ever tasted. So what is sous vide? Sous vide is actually a French word, and the way that it is described over here is it's under vacuum. That's what it literally means. And what basically happens is that you seal off the food, and a lot of times it's meat, in some sort of sealed bag. You place it into a pot or into a tub, and in the tub you have what essentially is an infusion heater, where you have a stick which does two things. One is it circulates all the water, and the other thing it does is it heats the water to a very precise temperature. And the unique thing about sous vide is what it does is it heats the water to a temperature which is much lower than the regular temperature we would cook at. So, so people would use, let's say, 62 degrees Celsius, the 140s Fahrenheit, and they would leave it at that specific temperature for a longer period of time. And the water is circulating, so the temperature is very precisely calibrated. And when you leave it that long in this particular setting, what happens is the food cooks slower, and it cooks more throughout. So it means that the taste is unique. So when you have, let's say, a well-cooked sous vide, steak as an example, it's soft and the taste is unique all the way through. There's no burnt on the outside and red on the inside. It's a beautifully tasting steak. A lot of people actually use sous vide as the preparatory step actually to do a good barbecue as well. So it gets the right level of freshness before even doing a barbecue. But in a lot of restaurants, you'll see this. And so this is magnificent. So what you could do is people do it, for some smaller things. Let's say, I was just speaking to Seth last night, and he's just very helpful because he really made the most magnificent meat. And I was asking him, some meats you could go for, let's say, even 1.5 hours to 2 hours. Some you could leave for 12 hours. To 48 hours, so maximum about 72 hours you could put the meat on or whatever it is that you're cooking, and it really is an incredible outcome. So it raises a lot of very fascinating questions. This used to be, by the way, something you could only get as like in the most fanciest of restaurants where they had a special chef and a special equipment. Today it's become commercialized so much that you can order it from Bed Bath & Beyond, you can order it on Amazon, you can just get a set, and if you play around long enough before the guests arrive, everything should be fine. But nonetheless, so the way it's supposed to work is you're supposed to put the actual food in a vacuum-sealed bag, but a lot of people just use Ziplocs, and they put it into the water. So it raises a lot of fascinating questions, and it gives us the opportunity of learning some of the most important aspects of Shabbos and Kashrus today together. So this is not necessarily just about sous vide, but it gives us the opportunity of thinking about some of the especially important matters when it comes to our own lives. So I'd like to do the following, dividing the ideas that we're going to learn today into two sections. The first one is Hilchos Shabbos, and the other one is Hilchos Kashrus. So those are the two parts. One is the section of Shulchan Aruch called Orach Chaim, which is we more frequently study, which the Mishnah Berurah is on. We're going to learn a little bit about Shabbos, and then we're going to also learn a little bit about Hilchos Kashrus, which is to be found in another section of the Shulchan Aruch called Yoredeah, which is all the halachas of Bosa V'Cholov, and Isur V'Heter, and Tevila. All those halachas appear there. So it gives us an opportunity to start there. So let's start at the very beginning. So here's the question. The way we should look at it is why should, let's say I want to have perfectly formed, perfectly cooked steaks on my Shabbos Seuda in the morning. So what should be the issue if, like my challan pot, I switch it on before Shabbos and I put the food in it, and let's say it's cooked to a sufficient degree, and I let it go, and I just let it go until Shabbos morning. I take the steaks out, and I have now fresh, delicious steaks for my Shabbos morning. Mr. Uda, what's the difference between that and a challan pot? That's the sort of the background question that should be in our minds as to try to understand this. So that, if that's the question, let's try to look at some of the issues that are at stake. The first issue is the following, is an enigmatic Mishnah. This Mishnah is the cause of so much dispute that, in fact, not only did this dispute remain in the times of the Mishnah and the Gemara and afterwards, but still today we'll see that the dispute of understanding this Mishnah is true. So here, let's read this. It's really one line, but this one line is ambiguous to a degree that it's going to yield very different outcomes in our lives. So let's take a quick look at this Mishnah. The Mishnah is the beginning of what's called Perek Kira. It's the third Perek in Maseches Shabbos, and it's called Kira because of the first word. The word Kira actually means a stove, or an oven in the times of the Gemara, which was usually an earthenware container, which had a fire in it, and you could put either pots on top of it, or you could put things inside it around the fire. That's how it would work. So the Mishnah tells us, Kira shi sikua bakash uvigvava. Let's say the fuel burning inside my little oven is going to be straw or straw. V'noisnin oleho tavshil begefes v'eitzim. So you can put on it a tavshil, a cooked item. But gefes uva'etzim, if the fuel was more severe, a stronger kind of fuel, so not just like straw, but it's like real wood, right? Lo yitain ad sheyigrof ad sheyitain es ha'efer. You can't place the pot on it unless you cover the coals. You sweep out the coals, or you cover them with ashes to cool it down. So this is the idea over here. Now, let's just think about this very carefully for a moment to appreciate what's going on. It seems like, over here, that and it's very clear, that we're not dealing with the Isser of Bishul B'Shabbos. We're not dealing with the problem of cooking. That's what seems to be clear from the Mishnah. If you were cooking, if it was something which you could cook, that's an independent Isser. That's an Isser D'Oraisa. We're dealing with something else. We're saying that there's another activity not allowed to be able to do, and that activity is ambiguous. Because what's the verb in this Mishnah? What does the Mishnah actually say you're not allowed to do? Ad sheyitain, until you give, you place. But what kind of placing? When am I placing that? Are we talking about Erev Shabbos? Are we talking about Shabbos, right? When is the Isser? Is the Isser placing something on a different types of fire? Let's say a fire with heavier fuel or lesser fuel. Is it talking about before Shabbos or on Shabbos itself? Those actually have different names. We have to do different names for those different activities. The word nesina is ambiguous, of putting. What are the names for putting it on before Shabbos? What's the word we use for that? We use a specific halakhic terminology, and that's called shehiya, which means allowing to stay. On Shabbos putting it, we call it hachzara, returning it to the flame. So let's say I take the challan pot off, can I put it back on? Two separate Isurei Derabanan, two separate rabbinic prohibitions, which have independent logics of themselves, which are independent of Bishul. Even though now it may not be a possibility of Bishul. So take a look. The first line of the Gemara already identifies this issue. The Gemara says in the top of source 3, Gemara Shabbos Lamed Vavam Abay says, Iboy lehu, hai lo yitain lo yachsirhu, is that word lo yitain not to place? Does it mean to say I cannot do hachzorah, return on Shabbos to the fire that originally was on? That's what I'm not allowed to do. Aval lishois mashin aval pi she'eno garuf ve'eno kotum. But to put it on the Erev Shabbos would be fine by inference. So therefore, if I were to do it before Shabbos, even though it is still a real flame, it hasn't been put out or raked, then it would be fine to do shehiyah. Umani Chananya, he and the author of the Mishnah would be a Tana by the name of Chananya. Datanya Chananya Oimer Kolshu Kamachul Ben Jusai Muta Lishois Al Gabi Kira Aval Pisha Eno Gora for Eno Kotam. Chananya is of the opinion that if I were to place my pot on Erev Shabbos onto an extinguished flame, that's fine as long as it reaches the area of cooking called Machul Ben Jusai. What is Machul Ben Jusai? Ben Jusai is a person. Ben Jusai was a robber rat. So everybody has a profession. Ben Drusai was a thief, and because his general kind of his profession kept him on the run, he was on business trips a lot of the time, so he couldn't really stop too long. So he would eat with his food not being necessarily cooked to the full degree. So he cooked it to the least amount of degree that was healthy or available at that time before they invented Japanese cuisine. And so what happened was is that there's a discussion as to how much is Machlo Ben Drusai, and there's a machlokes as to whether it is a third cooked or half cooked. At that point in time, as long as it's a third cooked or half cooked, and therefore it's basically edible, says Rebbe Machananya, you put it on the flame before Shabbos, you're done, you're good. Even though it's not goruf or kotum, the coals are not raked or covered. However, the other option is Odilma, maybe, says the Gemara by the underline and the bold. No, the Mishnah is not talking about on Shabbos, it's talking about even before Shabbos. You cannot put it onto the stove. V'i goru v'kotum in v'iloi kol shekein lahachzir. And so, if it's not, the flame is not being extinguished essentially or covered, then in this way, I'm not allowed to put it on Erev Shabbos, even though it is already partially cooked. So this is the debate of Chananya and the Chachamim, and this debate rages on in terms of every aspect of Hilchos, Hachzorah, and Shehiyah on the next two blat in Shabbos. So every different case and permutation is discussed within the context of this Mishnah. The Chachamim would say that the Mishnah really means to tell us that there is an Isur of putting something on the fire before Shabbos. That's what's called Shia, even though it's partially cooked.
So you're saying you have a flame that could continue the cook on Shabbos. You can put something on. I mean, you can't. Not restricted.
Yeah. So let's clarify.
You restrict. Yeah. I'm trying to understand.
Yeah. So let's clarify. If I have I have a flame on. I'm going to use flame right now because oven's a little more complicated. Let's say I have a flame, and I take an uncooked item and I put it on the stove on Shabbos. I have transgressed. Bishul, I've cooked on Shabbos. I've taken something which is raw, I've put it on the flame, I'm cooking it. That's not what we're talking about. Here we're talking about something which, technically speaking, is already cooked. What am I doing? I'm dealing with something where, let's say it's been cooked, and I simply take it off the stove, and I put it back on. That's what Tachzor is on Shabbos, right, in that case. Or, the case is on before Shabbos, I put it on, and it's going to continue cooking. So I'm not doing Bishul, so to speak, I didn't really cook it. I put it on before Shabbos, and that action's continuing through Shabbos. In this case, what's the problem? So before Shabbos, we have what's called the prohibition of shehiyah, of leaving it on the oven beforehand, or hachzorah is returning it on the stove unless there's specific conditions which we're somewhat familiar with. So that's what the discussion is over here. How you read this Mishnah is going to dictate one specific difference, and that is, let's just take a look at my very technologically advanced diagram at the bottom of page 2 over here. So here you have a piece of meat, the different stages of cooking. So moving from left to right, there's 0% cooked. If you put something which is 0% cooked to 33% or 50% cooked on the stove on Shabbos, you have transgressed Bishul B'Shabbos. That's an Isur Da'arai, so you transgress Shabbos completely. That's a big problem. However, we're dealing with something which is either 30% or 50% cooked to 100% cooked. So let's say we have something which has basically already had some degree of cooking, and now putting it on the stove either before. Thank you so much. And by the way, thank you to Dr. Huberfeld. Thank you to Alan Stamitz for ensuring that we have the necessary ingredients to survive this morning, which is, so the coffee is outside. Thank you. Thank you. Everybody's welcome to take a surreptitious coffee break. So we're dealing with a stage over here that we already have some degree. I'm sorry, this one's actually I'm going to ask you to take that one. Thank you. Sorry, I just have extra notes. And you'll notice that actually some of the photocopies are made on the shul letterhead, which means to say that you can actually get to see the board of directors through the Mishnah. Okay, so so anyways, it just depends how lucky you are in terms of which copy you got. Fully cooked. So here we go. We're dealing with over here where you have something which has already been partially cooked. And the question is before Shabbos or on Shabbos? Can you return it or can I place it there before Shabbos? Our main concern now is going to be the area of Shehiyah. Before Shabbos, it's Erev Shabbos now. I have something which is 50% cooked. May I put it on the stove or not? According to the Chachamim, this Mishnah is dealing with Shehiyah. And it would not be allowed to put on a half-cooked chalent before Shabbos unless it is what's called Goruf V'Kotum. Unless I have covered the coals, I've sort of in a certain sense made it inaccessible to adjustment. The Racha Hananya would say, no, once it's 50% cooked, ma'achol ben drusai, even if the flames are adjustable, even if the flame is still going, it's fine. As long as it's already partially cooked, we're fine on an Erev Shabbos. That makes a big difference. Because that the difference is whether you need to have what's called gorof v'kotem, whether you need to make the flame non-adjustable. What's the concern by Shahiyah? The concern is the following. There's two options that Rashi gives in the Gemara. One is it's michzei kemevasher, it looks like you're cooking it. The other option is the primary one, which is shema yachate begecholim. What's going to happen? I have something which is 51% cooked, and I want to make sure it's going to be ready for the meal just in time. So what am I going to do? I'm just going to stoke those coals, right? In modern parlance, I'm going to just adjust, just ever so slightly, right? I'm going to adjust the gas. I'm going to adjust the electricity so that it's going to either hasten it or slow it down. That's the concern. So it's an independent problem of than Bishul. It's not because I'm cooking. It's because of the Shem Yechata, which is an independent issue. That's what the concern is. There. So what do we do? Halacha? Do we pasken that Shehiya, that putting on an Erev Shabbos is only allowed when it's either fully cooked? We'll have to discuss that case. When it's gorof v'kotem, where the flames are inaccessible, or once it's 50% cooked, it's fine, even if the flames are in still force. That's the question in Shehiyah. So how do we paskin the halacha? The answer is, it's still a machlokes. That's what's fascinating about this. Is this, the Gemara itself actually never resolves it. The Gemara, like ping pong, brings two blat worth of raya's backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards in this particular debate, which affect every area of Hilchos, Ahzor, and Shehiyah. And finally, the Gemara never actually really seems to give a specific outcome, which is what allows the Shulchan Aruch to record it as a debate. So, for instance, we're not going to actually read it inside now, but in source 4, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that let's say I have a stove. It talks about this particular place, this halacha in Simon Reshon and Gimel and Arachayim, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins le chumra like the chachamim that shehiyah on Erev, leaving a half cooked substance on the stove on Erev Shabbos is not allowed unless I have done gorof v'kotem. I have removed the coals. I'm not able to adjust them to avoid the issue of shem yachate begecholim. And the Ramah says, no, there's a Yesh Omrim. Some people agree that it's all right, even if it's Machal Ben Jusai, even if it's only partially cooked, even if it's not Gorof or cotton. That's what the Ramah says. So what do we do? What do we do in this instance? La Halacha, what do we do? So if you are Svardi, that means to say one would have to be Machmir. If you're Ashkenazi, it sounds like one would be able to be Mekil, because the Ramah Paskins Lekula, the Svardi Posek is Maran HaShulchan Aruch of Yosef Kara. Rav Moshe Isselis, the notes, the glosses in the Shulchan Aruch Paskins Lekula, seems to be that's the way it is. However, take a look at this fascinating Bir Halacha. The Chavetz Chaim, in his notes on the sum total of the Noisei Kelim, most of the commentators on Shulchan Aruch, makes a very fascinating note in Source 5. V'nagul ha'kelkes svara achrona. He says, Ayin beves Yosef, sheherich harbe be'elu ha'shtei adeos. The Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Kara, in his previous commentary, before he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, actually expands upon these two ideas in great extent. V'heretik divrei ha'rosh shekosav debibnei sheYisrael adukim b'mitzvos oinek Shabbos u'bevada lo yishmu ulanu alkein hanach lohem ayen shom. So he says, there's the Chananiah and the Chachamim. Chananiah is more mekil, to allow a partially cooked item being put on the stove, even though the stove is not covered, the flames aren't covered. And the Chachamim are machmir. He says, but b'Yisrael, they're adukim b'mitzvos, which means to say, they love doing the mitzvah of Oinek Shabbos. We love food. We love food on Shabbos. And people are going to be making the Chananya. He says, we don't have the ability to be able to change that. Which means to say that the kula of the Ramah, saying that we can be making like Chananya, to have a half-cooked cholent, which I put on the flame, and I don't cover that flame on an Erev Shabbos, is, in fact, a kula because of, sort of in a certain sense, the inertia of Klal Yisrael. And he says, but it would be better if a person were to be more machmir, that one should make sure that it is fully cooked or the flame is covered on an Erev Shabbos. That's what he suggests. Now, what does it actually mean to do gorof v'kotem? Meaning, what's at stake here? What does it mean to cover the flame? So if you look in the old ovens, if you take a look on the top of page 4, you know, the old oven, the top left there, you have, you know, a sort of an earthenware container, not a really big container. And what would happen is that a kira would have one hole at the top, and you'd place the pot there, the flame would be inside, and you could do other things inside. So you could put, let's say, bread on the sides of it. You could paste the breads on the side. That's how the bread would actually bake. Or you could put things around the fire on the inside, and there's obviously a lot of heat which is trapped in that container. That's how it would work. So what does garuf v'kato mean? What is the necessary prerequisites? So what I would do is I would either rake out the coals, so the heat source is no longer there, even though the actual container itself remains very hot. Or kato means to say I would cover it with ashes, so I'd cover the coals with ashes so that now it's no longer as much of a heat source. Problem is that that's not exactly the way it works with our stoves and our ovens today. Right? We're not throwing ash on anything, we're not removing the heating element. So what do we do? What does that look like today? So it happens to be a very big debate in halacha. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Aaron Kotler have a debate. La halacha, what does that look like in today's day and age? On the one hand, what we might say over here is there's two parts to our stove. Let's take a stove top as an example. So we have the heating element, which is the electric heating element. And we also have the dials, right? The dials control the temperature, but the element itself is really sort of like the fire. That's interesting because in those days, the element and the dials were the same thing. It was the coals. So if I wanted to make it hotter, what do? I'd stoke the element, I'd stoke the coals, right? Here, I've separated the control of heat and the actual heat source. Do you see what's happened? So which one of it is the one that I need to either cover or make out of access? Rav Aaron Kotler says, well, what's the concern? Shem yechad b'chonim, you can adjust the temperature. Where do you adjust the temperature? It's not like you throw, you know, gasoline onto the heating element. What do? You actually just turn the knob. It's much simpler today. So what do you need to cover? You need to cover the knobs. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, no, it's the actual heating element itself. That's the concern, like it was in the times of the Gemara. So what do we have? So as an example, when you look at a blech, what is a blech? That's a blech is exactly this. A blech is precisely for this idea. What does the blech do? Blech is a metal plate which covers the heating elements on top of on the stove. And in fact, today the best blechs actually have a little lip which goes down and covers, depending where it is, your dials. Depends like what kind of oven, a stove. We have a stove top where the dials are actually on the right. So if you just have a longer blech, it covers them as well. That's fine. Then what have you done? I now have a situation called goruf v'kotum. I've now essentially covered both the heating element and the adjustment of the heating element, which would allow me now to put a pot, even if it's partially cooked, on Erev Shabbos, because the Chachamim would allow that. You see what's happening over here? From 50% to 100%, even the Chachamim would allow that. That's how we do it. Which is the same thing with the challen pot, by the way. So how does it work with the challen pot? Generally speaking, let's say, there's different deos, and one doesn't want to get involved in different people's, you know, expertise and when they put their challens on. But let's say an average person puts the challen pot on a Friday morning. Some people do Thursday night, some people just before Shabbos. Let's say an average person puts on the challen pot somewhere Friday morning. So by the time Shabbos comes in, it's already certainly Ma'achol Ben Drusai, meaning it's to say it's still, right, for those who Tameah Chaim Zoch, who have the little, you know, the little party where nobody's looking just to take a little bit out, it's already, you know, it's already reached that stage as Shabbos is coming in. Certainly at Ma'achol Ben Drusai, maybe even more. At this point in time, if we want to be concerned for the Chachamim, where even if it's between 50 and 100%, I need garuf v'kotum, what do people do? That's why you'll see that a lot of people will cover, they'll have foil in the inside of their challen pot, right? That's covering the element, essentially. And the foil will go out and cover the dial, or there'll be tape across the dial so that I shouldn't be able to adjust the dial, because that is making the challen pot, essentially rendering it garuf v'kotum, so I should be allowed to have semi-cooked challen when it comes to Shabbos, as an example, for the day of the Chachamim. Chananya wouldn't require that, but the Be'er Halacha tells us we should be machmir like Chananya. That's like the Chachamim. That's what seems to happen over here. You see what's happened over here? This is how the minhag we have today and our cooking and our pre-Shabbos cooking has evolved. There's one extra element over here which is fascinating, and that is what's called Kidro Chaisa, which we didn't get a chance to get to. And that is, there's one exception where even the Chachamim would agree is fine if it's not Garuf v'kotum, if the flames aren't covered. And what's that? That's if I have something which is completely raw. So let's say I take a completely raw piece of meat and I put it on the fire just before Shabbos. There's no concern of garuf v'kotum, of shem yechad, that I'm going to start adjusting it. Why? Because it's not going to make a difference. At this point, it's such a long range to go that it's not going to be eaten on Friday night. There's no concern about that. It's only going to be for Shabbos morning, so nobody's going to touch it. So that's another hetcher. So let's say, as an example, let's say somebody forgets to put on the challens and it's 5 minutes before Shabbos. What do you do? That's fine. You put on just before Shabbos. That's what's called kidra chaisa. Right, you have the meat is raw, everything is raw, I can put it on, fine. Right, even though it hasn't reached yet a half level of cooking because it's just completely raw. The danger time is when you have a challenge which is between 0 and 50%. That's where it actually becomes more complicated because it hasn't reached Ma'achol Ben Drusai, which is why it's the hour before Shabbos is not the time to put on a new challenge. It's either much earlier in the day, or right before Shabbos. You can't have them between, because you don't have Malchut Midrashah then. You don't have the basic level of cooking. Just basics. This is the regular Hilchot Shabbos. Hang on 1 second. So let's apply this. Let's apply this now to sous vide. So what do you have in the case of sous vide? Yeah? So I have a longer cooking process, and I can actually work out when it is 33%. I can work out when it's 50% cooked. It's totally fine. The issue is that what do I do about Goruf or Kotim in this case? What do I do? How can I cover the heat? You know, what are you going to do? You're going to put something into and destroy your heater? What are you going to do with that? I might be able to cover, let's say, the adjustment knobs. But it's more complicated today. Any sous vide machine that you're going to get, which is half respectable, has an app. I mean, like, I'm not cooking next to the stove anymore. I'm cooking in my office, after all, right? Why do I need to be able to watch anything, right? So I'm adjusting it to the temperature precisely through my app. A little more complicated to say Goruf or Kotim in these things. By the way, ovens are going that way soon. Soon, no respectable oven is going to be with these big, you know, lumpy dials where you turn things. You know, it's going to be much more complicated. So what do you say about Goruf or Kotim? I can't cover the elements, right, because it's going to interrupt the entire flow over here. Covering the dial itself may not be sufficient for Goruf or Kotim, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Not so simple. So here we have a situation where even though I might have 50% cooked, I don't have the ability of doing Goruf or Kotim. So it's more complicated to do Shia. There's Yesh Mokel Hakel, because after all, the Ramot does say we can be Mekel like Chananya. That is, if it's between 50 and 100% of cooked, and I put it on Erev Shabbos, even if it's not Goruf or Kotim, one can rely on that. And certainly if it's a Kidra Chais, if I put it in just before Shabbos and it is raw, that's fine too. So there is the space. To be making all this, one has to be... There's concern, just put it that way. But nonetheless, one can be mekel. So that's item number one, perhaps the most complicated of all the items we're going to discuss today, which is Shehiyah. So if this was flying above or through, let's hang on now to discuss the next thing. Yes, Ilana.
Well, just in terms of the crock pot pudding, there's a lot of shortcuts, like browning your meat and vegetables and bringing things up to a certain boil for half an hour and then transferring it into the crock pot.
So, yep. Yes, there's more options as it agrees. Yes, the problem is that if you're putting something raw in, which was not going to reach Malchut Midrashah before Shabbos, that's where the concern comes. So if you're not going to get 50% cooked before Shabbos, yeah.
One other thing: how much of recognition of people choosing the path of least resistance factors into these decisions?
Are you talking about being a guest or being a host?
No, I'm just thinking, like, you know, certain people will be more machmir, but there's a larger percentage of people who take the path of least resistance.
That's a very good question. That's an excellent question. Especially in this case over here, where you see that there's the Be'er Halacha is saying that we saw a certain trajectory, which has been arrived at because Yisrael Adukim Mitzvahs, which, by the way, he's quoting the Rosh, that's 8 centuries ago as well. Right? So things haven't changed in the Jewish culinary field. So it's a good question. You know, I think on an individual basis, people should be yearning, aspiring to do this. Whereas on a communal level, the Be'er Halacha is saying, you paste up the sign outside. It's not going to be, you know, we need to know what's available. Yes, Tibby.
Yeah, you said you put oil inside, but if you have something that comes out, you still have to put oil.
So Rav Willig, just the way Rav Willig paskins, that the same cover which is covering the coals needs to be the one covering the dials. Because in the times of the Gemara, it was the same thing. So, right? I mean, you say the element and the adjustment is the same in the same Gemara because you just touch the coals, not with your hand. But in today, so they're separated, so we should have the same cover for them. So here, the element of the cholent pot is inside, right? So it's essentially the sleeve or the machine that I'm putting my sarag bowl into. And then the dials on the outside. So Rav Willig says you should have a cover on the inside, which is sort of the cover to remind us about the element itself, and that cover should come out and cover the dial itself, which means to say it's the same cover which is covering both the element and the dial. The other people are not so much on that, and they would say you can have separate covers, you could just tape the dial. The other person, just so you should be aware, person can say that maybe just covering the dial is not sufficient, you should actually pull off the dial. Most of the old cholent pots, it works. Meaning if you have a digital one, it's more complicated, you just cover it. But the old ones, you could just pull it off. It's usually a semicircle knob, which is covered by the cholent. If you take that off, it's harder to do that unless you're sort of, you know, pulling out your wrench, which is, you know, at that point in time, you should have realized that this is not a good idea on Shabbos. So nonetheless, that's the way it's suggested. Food for thought as to a regular Shabbos, what a regular Shabbos looks like. Yes?
The concept of a blech.
Yes.
To cover the fire.
Yes.
You can't adjust. If you don't see the fire,
yes.
The knobs are open.
Correct.
But you can't adjust.
Nachon. Nachon. So Rav Moshe seems to say that the real element is I see the fire, I'm going to do something about it. So if I'm covering that, then I'm not going to do anything about it. Rav Kotler says, no, but the actual adjustment is the knobs itself. So we do both. That's what we do la'alocha today. I don't want to get lost in the trees yet, but this is one aspect of Shabbos. So Lagabe Shehiyah, that's one aspect. There's another problem, and this is perhaps more severe, and that is what's called Hatmona. What is Hatmona? There are three things that are not bishul, but we'll call it bishul extensions when it comes to Shabbos. They are Isurei Derabon. One we've dealt with is Shehiyah. We didn't get too involved in Hachzorah. That is, let's say I take my cholent off, can I put it back on, right? You can under five conditions. We're not going to go into that right now. But then there's the other notion, which is called Hatmona, which is wrapping, covering things up. So the general rule is that when it comes to Hatmona, there's a number of conditions for Hatmona to be affected. And that is, let's say I'm covering my cooked item, or my item which is perhaps on still in the heat element. I'm covering it in a way which we as Ashkenaz and Paskin is fully covered, really, or at least the walls and the bottom is covered at the very least. And I'm doing that even before Shabbos with the Dovra Moistev Hevel, something which is adding or preserving to a larger degree, insulating the heat inside. I'm not allowed to do that even on Erev Shabbos. This is the way the Gemara words it in. Let's take a quick look over here. Where's this Gemara? Here we are, in source 6. The Gemara in Shabbos, Lamed Dalet on Beis, the Gemara says, Mimnei ma omru ein tom ne medovar ha moistev hevel afilu mi bo od yom. I can't cover my pots that are hot on Erev Shabbos with something which just preserves the heat inside them. Shema yatmin beremetz sheyesh bo gacheles, because I might cover it with something which is actually cooking it. Omar Abaye, v'yatmin shegzer shem yechad b'gecholim. So what's the problem with covering with it with, let's say, coals? Because the issue is I'm going to maybe again stoke the coals. So there's this additional isur of hatmona. On Shabbos, there's a prohibition of covering something with even with a substance which is ena moisef hevel, which is not such a good insulator. But on the Erev Shabbos, the isur is something which is moisef hevel, which either insulates very well or provides extra heat to it. I'm not allowed to do that fully covering. Now, this is complicated because, you know, there's many situations in Shabbos, you know, like let's say covering a hot challah on Friday night as an example. Is that hatmona? You know, so there's a number of conditions needed to be met in order to be able to consider it hatmona. One is that it needs to be actually touching the item. So my cover of the pot needs to be tightly around the pot. It can't be that I'm putting my pot into, let's say, an oven which is on a standardized low temperature, right, as an example, or an oven which was hot and is now off, right? Because why? Even though it's in a hot area, it's not that the walls are against the kli, right? I'm actually, you know, surrounding it. It's in a hot environment. That's not considered hatmona as an example, which resolves some issues. It also has to be that I'm doing it with the intention of it being hatmona, right? I need to be doing it in order that I want to preserve the heat in this, not just that I'm covering the chalas as an example. What about when I'm dealing with a situation as sous vide? So what's happening over here? I have warm water. I have meat which is in bags, which is completely surrounded or submerged. The bags are submerged in the hot liquid. The liquid is above what is called Yad Soledes Bo, which is the critical level for Bishul. That is, for those Fahrenheit speakers, is 112 degrees Fahrenheit, which is why I'm Paskin. Sous vide is in the 140s, or there's a range. But nonetheless, it's usually above Yad Soledes Bo. So it's a lower temperature, which is certainly above Yad Soledes, which constitutes a problem. So now I have something which I have food in liquid, the liquid's warm. What do I do in this case? Not so simple, because, you know, the first thing you may think is, well, what about, let's say, a potato in my cholent? You know, a carrot in my chicken soup? There you have an item which is fully submerged, hopefully, in my, let's say, my chicken soup, which is very, very hot. Is that a problem with hatmona? And the answer obviously is, no, that's it. Why? Why is it not hatmona? Because it's the same thing. It's the substance, right? I'm drinking the soup. I'm eating the carrots. Unless you like my children, right? The point is that it's all one substance. The problem is that when it comes to sous vide, it's not one substance. Nobody is drinking the water out of the what they call it. There's a name for the not the trough. There's a name for it. I forget. It's slipping me right now. There's a name for the container. I think it's called the sea. Or there's a name for that they use for it technically. So nobody's drinking that water. That water is simply used as the heating element. But at the same time, my food is submerged fully in it. And is a Dovra Moisef Hevel something which is adding heat? Absolutely, that's the point of it. Which means to say, even on an Erev Shabbos, there's an Isra of Atmana, but Dovra Moisef Hevel. Here's an example of how it came up most recently. Just within the last century, as an example. Ooh, actually, no, we'll deal with that a little later. But there's a discussion in Halacha about the following case. Take a look in Source 9. The Mishnah Berurah is dealing with the following case. So again, Mishnah Berurah had not yet had access. The Chofetz Chaim did not yet eat sous vide cooking. But nonetheless, he had a very similar case which appeared in Halacha. Here's what he says. Source 9. Because to Achronim, he quotes Achronim, doesn't specify who this is. She'aso likach kli b'soicha mashket tzoinen. You cannot take a cold, let's say, cold liquid, which is in a bottle, as an example. And you can't submerge it into a hot bath of water or hot container of water. When would any rational human being do this? Baby bottles, right? So you're not allowed to take the baby bottle of cold milk because the baby's not going to have it. You can't take it and fully submerge it in the water. But even if the cold milk is not going to ever arrive at 112 degrees, right? You're not doing that to your child. But the point is you want to just take the edge off it. Right? In such a case, since it's completely submerged. If it would be only partially submerged, then it's not an issue of hatmana. But if I'm fully submerging that bottle of milk into the dish of warm water or hot water, that is an issue of hatmana. The Chazanish disagrees, but interestingly enough, Rav Shecht Paskin for the OU on this particular issue says this is a real issue. It's a real issue of Hatmana. Here's the water. It's Davar HaMoisef Hevel. It's before Shabbos. I'm putting it in. It's fully submerged. I want it to stay warm. It's completely, it's vacuum packed, so it's completely surrounded. In this case, it would be like the bottle on an Erev Shabbos. By the way, interesting question that comes up to this is, what about the cholent pot then? Right? So we need to say, what about, so I have my ceramic bowl, which has my cholent in it, and I'm putting it into the sleeve, which is essentially a heating element on all sides. Why is that not a problem of Shehi, of putting something on Erev Shabbos, but it is an issue of Hatmana? Surely it's already been an issue of Hatmana. So it happens to be a little more complicated. Is Hatmana, so it surely is, yeah, your cholent pot's on the standard temperature all the way around.
But it's consistent.
That's fine, it's still 100%. It's most of it means to say either maintaining or continuing the heat. But yeah, why isn't that a case of Hatmana on an Erev Shabbos? So, so there's a discussion as to, so what level of coverage do you need to have for it to be Hatmana? Interestingly enough, the Shulchan Aruch is more machmir. He says even if it's just the bottom and the rest is just covered with something, the elements at the bottom and the sides are covered. There are people who are noig to be machmir, just to be careful. So you perhaps have seen this before, where people will put some sort of interruption between the cholent pot and the heating element and the pot itself. So for instance, they'll take a pebble, they'll take up a rolled up ball of aluminum in America, and you'll put it in the bottom, and you'll put it on top in such a way that there's a little air break between the pot and the actual heating element. Why? To avoid the Hatmana issue, if it's sufficient to be considered Hatmana by the bottom and the sides being heated at the same time. Just to be aware of that, where you see that coming from. There are many cholent pots which doesn't create an issue. So for instance, we have a cholent pot which has three sizes. We have the small size, medium size, and big size. And as Baruch Hashem, the family and the guests continue to come, nobody's using. Why do they even make the small size? I don't even know. But nonetheless, so the big sizes, they protrude outside of the element. And so therefore, there's not even a concern on that level. But if you will ever see, and the concern that some people have to have a little bit of an air break is as a function of the Hatmana issues. Maybe, yeah.
So how would it differ then? If we cover the bottom, right,
Oven is not an issue of Hatmana.
So it's not an issue.
Oven is not an issue. Why? Because the sides of the oven are not touching your pot.
Correct.
So there's no problem at Hatmana. There's the issue of Shehiyah, because I'm still leaving something in a heated, on a fire of sorts, while Shabbos is on. Before Shabbos, then I need to have an issue of Gorif for Kotum, that's covering the dials and all the ovens off as well. Or it's a Shabbos mode oven, as an example, where Shabbos mode oven basically just pegs it so there's no adjustability, which is the Shema, it takes the case of Gorif for Kotum. Yes.
Cloth, but it completely covers.
Yeah, so I remember actually Rav Willig used to say that. It used to say on it, you say Lekovod Shabbos Kodesh. Rav Willig said they should adjust the letters, is Lechalel Shabbos Kodesh. So, that's not allowed. Yeah. So, yes, correct. So it's more complicated. If it's all right, I don't want to lose because there's so many other interesting aspects of here. There's another aspect, by the way. This is just giving us. This is sort of like a survey. This is almost like a safari, Lahav deal, of Hilchos Shabbos. We're getting into just really, there's much more complexity to these halachas, as you can imagine. But these are just some of the aspects of it. Another example is what's called Hagasa. Hagasa is an issue which is related in Shulchan Aruch, and that is stirring an item which is still on its clear rishon. So, for instance, here's the example. Friday nights are very long. It's the beginning of December, and the challenge is just smelling divine. You've come back from shul, and you come and you want to just have a little bite, but you know that if you take too much or if you don't return it, that's it. That you can basically sign your death warrant right now. So, what do? So you can you take out a little bit, just a little bit? Nobody's going to really notice, right? They always do. So what do you do in such a situation? So the issue is like this: you can't really actually put the spoon into the challah pot, or let's say even on the Shabbos morning when I'm serving it, you can't really serve from the actual challah pot itself because it's on the clear rishon, on the fire still, even though it's not a problem of Yoshia. Why? Because when I move it around, there's certain elements are going to get close to the fire and it's going to increase, so it's a problem. So what do you have to do when you're serving challah? Always. You always have to take it off the fire, which now gets it into the question about returning it on Friday night. Because that you have the Hachzorah issues, it has to be biyad, and you have to know that you're returning it. Right, there's all the conditions of Hachzorah on a Shabbos. Why? Because I can only put the spoon into it and start mixing it around or take out of it when it's off the fire itself. So what about over here in the case of sous vide? So is there an issue? Let's say, for instance, as an example, that we got around the Hatmona and we got around the Shehiyah issues of leaving on an Erev Shabbos. Can I take something out on a Shabbos as an example? Right? So by taking out, what's going to happen? Now I'm sort of mixing the water. So Rabelski says there's no problem. Meaning even the minor heat adjustment which is going to happen to the water, not a problem in this case. It's not like, let's say, the different pieces in the Jolent. The other pieces over here are not going to be affected so severely necessarily because of my taking out one piece. So there's no issue of Agosa. But bottom line on the Hilchos Shabbos level, number one is there an issue of Shehiyah? Potentially, there could be an issue of Shehiyah. There's yesh makom lahakel when it comes to Shehiyah, leaving on a few on Erev Shabbos when it comes to this. Is there an issue of Hagasa, taking something out? No problem with Hagasa, because it's not like a challenge where other elements are now sort of getting close to the fire or not. The temperature is uniform across the entire basin. But there is an issue of Hatmana. It is certainly a case of Hatmana, which would prohibit us from setting up a sous vide on Erev Shabbos. Even on Erev Shabbos, to go into Shabbos to have the steak on Shabbos, because it is fully submerged, it is something which is davar moisef hevel, it's an iser derabbanan of hatmona, and there would be a concern. However, this does not bar us from, of course, cases on Yom Tov. So let's say we want to do sous vide on Yom Tov. Absolutely, it should be totally fine. In fact, you could set it up from before Yom Tov and go on to Yom Tov. Only proviso would be is you can't, like on a regular Yom Tov, you would not be able to set up the sous vide on day one for day two, because that's an issue of one day to another. That's a separate issue. But let's say I wanted to set up my sous vide on Erev Yom Tov for a really, really well done steak on day two. That's fine, right? That's no problem whatsoever in terms of setting it up. So that would be another example of how it's allowed in terms of Hilchos Shabbos. Want to move on to one or two other just fascinating halachas as opposed to applies to kashrus. So for instance, so Esther has it in the box. Do you need to toivel it, right? Do I need to toivel the kli itself? That's an interesting question. So we know that if you buy a kli, if you buy a vessel from a non-Jew, it's made by a non-Jew, it's bought from a non-Jew, I need to do tefillah before I use it, right? So what about in the case of sous vide? Do I need to tovel it or not? So it's not so simple because over here, there's two elements to the sous vide, right? There's the element which is actually cooking and circulating the water, and then there's the pot, the basin. Some people actually use large plastic troughs when you're doing it on a bigger basis. So what about that? So in this case, I believe, let me just make sure I got exact over here. The psak which is offered, there's a little bit of a discussion over here. Rabelski says that this does not require tefillah. Why? Because the immersion heater itself is almost like the coal, right? But it's never really coming into contact with the food. It's using the water as the medium for heating, right? But at the same time, the immersion heater itself is not ever touching the food. Unlike, let's say, a kettle, unlike a toaster, unlike anything else, where the actual element is in direct contact with the food itself. So in this particular case, there will be no requirement of tefillas kelim. The sources are actually on source 11 and 12. We're not going to go through it right now in Yoredeh Simon Kuf Chaf, where it talks about the difference between a tripods and the pidalash, where these are different parillas, which are barbecue grills. The difference between the tripod, which holds up the apparatus, or the actual spits itself. Here's the fascinating halacha. What about meat or milk? Meat and milk, as an example. So, Okay, question asked. What happens if I want to use my sous vide machine today for meat, tomorrow for milk? So it's not like a regular pot, should it, right? Meaning to say, it's not as if I'm putting milk and meat into the same pot. I'm simply using the same immersion heater and perhaps the same water. I could even change the water. And you know, it's in sealed plastic bags. So what's the big deal? Is there an issue in this case? Very fascinating halacha. So it relates to halacha in Yoredeh. This halacha in Yoredeh is a very complex halacha, extremely complex, which is why it's not sufficient time to really deal with it. But I just want to put it out there as the following. The case that is dealt with in Yoredeh Tzadi Beis Hay is the following case. Hilchos Basar V'Chalav. Let's say I have a pot, and the pot's on the stove, and inside my pot I have my chicken soup. Fantastic. And for whatever reason, and this should not be happening, but nonetheless, you're having your cup of tea right next to your chicken soup. And some little person in your house grabs your leg, and the tea splashes, and it lands not in the pot, but on the outside of the pot. That's the question. I have a drop of milk which is landing on the outside of a pot, which has meat inside. What is the halacha in this case? Very fascinating discussion. So there's a debate as to what's really happening with that drop. Is it sort of mefafea? Does it sort of get absorbed in the outside wall, in the wall of the kli? Or does it penetrate? There's a discussion as to what really goes on. The Shulchan Aruch paskens the following halacha. If it lands below, we're dealing with an older pot, if we're dealing with it below the level of the chicken soup, in that case, we measure, let's say that we can say the drop was, you know, a certain amount of size, we sort of have a more surety of what it is. We measure 1/60th, which is the ratio of bittul, of nullification, in the pot to what landed on the outside of the pot. We treat it almost as if the drop went straight in. Whereas if it lands above the watermark, where the chicken soup was, in that case, we have to treat the kli as that area as being milchik. And if when I pour the soup out, the soup is going over that area, it's pouring over treif, and I have to measure against that whole area as where there's a 60th, not just the amount of the milk, because the whole area could have been absorbed with milk. It's very complicated halacha to understand, because on the one hand, it seems to us on an initial, you know, from an initial perspective, is, you know, does milk really go through solid walls? Not so simple. One way of looking at this maybe is that this sugya itself is in the greater context of what's called chanan, chaticha nasis nevela, which means that what is the pot? Is the pot simply an extension of the chicken soup? Do I say this is a chicken soup pot and it's one entity? Because after all, the inside is bubbling the chicken soup, which is being absorbed into the walls, and that's now essentially it's landing like in the chicken soup, even though it's on the outside. Or do I say that no, the pot is an independent reality? There's the chicken soup, and there's the pot. The pot is almost a neutral reality which has absorptions on both sides. So it has absorptions of meat on the one side and absorptions of milk on the other side, and there's therefore treif left in the middle. That's the way that it's looked at. It's a very complicated halacha, and there's much more to discuss about it. Nonetheless, for all intents and purposes, if we have the actual item which is being cooked, and it is directly against the containing substance, so in this case, we have, let's say, a Ziploc bag or a vacuum-sealed bag. In this case, we're going to treat the vacuum-sealed bag as fleishik itself. So you say, no, really, you know, this is plastic. We're not dealing with earthenware in the times of the Gemara. We're dealing with plastic. So let me ask you a very basic question. And that is that, you know, when you're in the airport and you have those dogs that are coming around and they're all sniffing your bags and for all kinds of things, do you think there's any drug dealer who puts their cocaine into paper bags in their bag? I mean, like, what kind of responsible drug dealer would do that? Right? What are they doing? They have Ziploc bags too, so how's the dog smelling it? How's the dog smelling through Ziploc bags? These people are careful. The answer is that yes, certain particles can go through plastic. It's polymer. Which means to say, it's almost like, you know, if you can imagine there's a fence, like, you know, those metal fences. So is it impenetrable? Yes. Well, if you're running at it, it's going to be impenetrable no matter how hard you try. But if, let's say, I'm throwing through it now a marble, yes, the marble can get through. So it's the same thing. It's just on a more microscopic level. So yes, elements do go through plastic as well. And the Gemara and the halacha is paskening that when it comes to basar v'chalav, time is a concern, which means to say, here's the example that's offered by halacha. If you almost a century ago, after Tzvi Pesach Frank in Yerushalayim was asked the following question. It was an institution. Take a look at source 14. He was asked about a certain institution who had the following cooking apparatus. They had essentially a large bath of water, which was supplied with jets of water, which was keeping the bath entirely hot. And to save energy, essentially, that's the only way I can imagine it was being used, is they put all the pots cooking for all the children in this institution were placed into this bath, and they had various pots cooking at the same time. So as opposed to, you know, sort of different flames that you're paying for in the fuel, now it's one bath which is being cooked. Isn't this interesting? This is long before sous vide, right? So this question is the question he was asked is, can I have one set of pots which are fleishik and one set of pots which are milchik? After all, they're not touching each other. Right? So similar kind of case over here. So Rav Tzipesach Frank says, it says as would be expected in this case, you cannot do this, and you have to designate it to be either fleishik or milchik bath, similarly to what we're dealing with over here, because we view the pot itself as fleishik. This pot itself is milk, and it's on the boil, it's in motion, and it's in a hot liquid. Therefore, this would be the way we would have to deal with it. Fascinatingly enough, there's another aspect which also should be considered, and that is that everybody makes mistakes. I mean to say, you can say vacuum pack, vacuum pack, vacuum pack. You can say seal, seal, seal. But we all know what happens. There's always something which comes out. There's always a split. There's a, you know, it wasn't packed properly. Something comes out. It's always going to end up being fleishik or milchik, whichever it is, even without getting into these halachos. Fascinating halachos to apply. This is one example of it. What about, and let's perhaps close with this, and that is meat and fish. So there's the Shulchan Aruch tells us, source 15, Sorech shilizor shelo leechol basar dag biyachad mipne basar v'dag biyachad mipne shekosha letzaras. There's a health concern of eating fish and meat together. And Agos says, Litzos Bosor im Dag Mishum Recha. Okay, and you shouldn't roast them at the same time. So what about that? So do we say it's the same level of Isra as not? So the Taz, the Turei Zav, which his name actually came from yesterday's parasha, says the following, that in the case over here that we're dealing with, let's say when you're not dealing with meat and fish together that are being cooked in the same pot as an example, but I'm dealing with a ta'am, a taste of fish or a taste of meat. There's no concern. So example being, let's say I have a fleshic pot. If the pot is clean, I'm allowed to use it for fish. And if I have a fish pot, I'm able to clean it and use it for meat. Even within 24 hours where we have that there's a real taste, there's a real ta'am in the pot. Similarly over here, what are we dealing with? We're not dealing with mamashus necessarily. We're not dealing with the fact that there was meat which was, you know, flowing directly through. No, we're dealing with the time. We're dealing with microparticles which we're concerned about. That's time. When it comes to that, we could still use it for both for meat and fish. In terms of the sous vide, and there'll be no need for this. Interesting enough, when I was speaking to Seth, the chef is a fantastic chef. You should go when you're in Teaneck to ETC Steakhouse. He said a very interesting thing, and that is that he also makes sure that whenever he does a sous vide, he makes sure that he switches it on as well. Something you would never think of, but of course, it's also cooking. So in terms of the Bishul Yisrael part of it as well. So the sous vide gives us an opportunity, first of all, to explore more very fascinating, delicious foods. But it also gives opportunity of taking a survey of some of the basics in terms of kashrus and Shabbos, which is precisely this. Thank you for taking the time.
So there's no sous vide on Shabbos.